One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Wrestling Daft presents The Daft Sheet.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of The Daft Sheet. I am your editor-in-chief, Chris Jack, here running the role over to journal jabronis as they look to get the best of the week's news and wrestling into this week's fictional dirt sheet that we're running. And this week I'm joined probably by the most capped members of the team thus far, Stephen Roach and Lewis McNaughton. Lads, how are we feeling this fantastic Wednesday night? Is Hurricane Agnes or Storm Agnes been running roughshod over you guys, or is it just happening over here?
It's been pretty rotten, but it's no animal no used to, so probably couldn't tell you the difference.
Mate. I wouldn't say it's anywhere cold or pushing rain than it usually is in the west coast of Scotland.
It's been raining sideways proper. Is it Pert Hapley in Family Guy? Is that him, or is he Parks and Rec?
It's got rain! It's got rain! It rains sideways!
That's pretty much been how it has been in Loyalist Larn all day today. Other than that, the deluge of rain hasn't dampened spirits. Indeed, there's been a deluge of news happening in the wrestling world this past week, which we are going to crack into just shortly. But first of all, before we get started, Steve, you had your stag do last weekend there, and you looked very fetching in your natural Libre get up. How did that go for you?
It was magnificent. From what little I can remember of it, but I had a really great time. Surreal travelling through York in a Lucha Libre suit, but I was getting plenty of onlookers anyway. It was quite surprising as well because none of my pals are really any wrestling fans, so I thought it was going to be something a lot worse. Like, say, a Borat suit.
Mankini, classic.
Aye. Or worse, like a Union Jack suit or something like that, just to really wind me up. But no, they actually took it surprisingly easy on me and put me in a Lucha Libre suit. I wanted to actually keep it, but it was fucking filthy and damp, so I had to chuck it out, sadly.
And did you take in all the sights and sounds of York? Did you go to the Jorvik Viking Centre or anything like that? No,
but I used to live there, so I've done all that before. All right. I just didn't get littered, to be honest, and that's exactly what we did. A couple of lads I know like got selfies in front of the Minster and all that, but beyond that, we really didn't do much. We went to the horse races, though. That was a great day. That was lovely. I get put in a rainbow suit for that with a horse's head. it was a great time.
And did you win anything?
No. I get jobbed in that one.
Cool stuff. Well, with that in mind, Steve, I thought, you know, with you being in your stag, your nuptials on the horizon, this week's sort of lead-in question is going to be if you could pick any wrestler, dead or alive, to be your best man. Who would you go for? But I'll come to you first, Lewis, on this one. Who would you pick if you were if your missus was taking you up the aisle? Who would be the man with the shiny ring to send you on your way?
Man with the shiny ring. to be fair, I don't know whether this man is dead or alive. I think he's a bit of both. But by listening to Theo Vaughn's podcast, with Ric Flair on it, and hearing some of his stories, I don't think there's anyone else that you could get the sort of crack with. And like Steve was saying, he was hoping it wouldn't be too bad for him. I reckon it would just be one fucking weekend of surprises with Ric Flair. In the jail, out of the jail, in the morgue, maybe not in the morgue, someone like that. So I think Ric Flair would be the bag of laughs. And if no Ric Flair, somebody like Hornswoggle, just going to be funny to be just handcuffed a wee leprechaun all day or something.
There's been two occasions in my life where I've been in the company of a performance-related small person, and both were involving my cousin. One was when he turned 30, and just like you said, there was they handcuffed a little person to him dressed as a policeman, and he had to go around Lanark, all the pubs doing that. Even when he was going for the pish, the little person had to go with him. And the second time was in Magaluf on his stag, where he got battered. We chipped in to watch my cousin get battered by a little person, and it ended with the little person putting an indoor firework up my cousin's arse and setting it off. So that was I was going to say eye opening, but it was a lot more than eyes were opened that night. But aye, Ric Flair, if you were close with Ric Flair enough that he was going to be your best man, the best man's speech would be incredible in that as well. Ramble, you've got to imagine.
The thing is, though, are you not more likely to be Ric Flair's best? Ric Flair's best man, because he gets married that many times.
Aye, everyone's been Ric Flair's best man at some point.
A different horseman at one time have been our best man.
That's the way to do it. Keep your friends close and your wife's further away, I suppose. And that and what about you, Steve? I'd imagine you've got a proper best man picked out, but if he was to fall ill, which wrestler are you enlisting to get you over the threshold?
Well, it needs to be Miro, because remember, he came in as the best man when he debuted in AEW.
That is a very salient point.
And he'll also sing What Is Love as the best man speech as well. But on top of that, like, imagine if like, Miro was your best man or on your stag. Nobody will fuck with you.
Not at all. The only drawback I can think of with that is if Miro was allowed to bring his partner to it, there's a pretty good chance CJ Perry would be pulling focus for your missus. And that's...
But you don't bring out the other halves on a stag do, you know? What happens in the stag do stays in the stag do.
I'll take your word for it. Anyway, that's two great choices for best men there. So we're going to get cracking on and get filling the daft sheet, as we see that Lewis has been attempting some 180s on his dartboard there recently.
I was running through the gap.
Sorry. It's been a pretty hefty news week in the world of professional wrestling and sports entertainment. So, Steve, I'll come to you first. What are you putting on the front page of this week's Daft Sheet?
I think I'm going to go with Jade Cargill signing with AEW. WWE. Jesus Christ. Still hungover from the stag do. I think it's a big signing. If you're putting Cody aside, it's the first big AEW to WWE transfer, and I'm not too surprised that it's Jade. I've always thought if WWE could get a choice of any AEW talent, top of the list would always be Jade Cargill, because she ticks every box: look, charisma, markability, solid in the ring, great at handling publicity. Great life background that they can tell an inspiring story for as well. She just ticks every list that they want in a superstar. And I'm not too surprised that she's jumped at the chance. I'm even like catching up on all the news on it. She's put out a kind of statement of it. Her heart has always been in WWE. And yeah, I think she's going to be a huge star, and it's a huge win for WWE. It's a bit of a kick in the balls for AEW, because I think they had to keep Jade in order to get this limping women's division back up and running again. And without her, it's going to be like a big miss.
You have a bit of a lag issue here.
Dramatic pause.
Indeed. Steve seems to have kind of dropped off.
I'm back on.
There we are. You kind of dropped it a wee bit there, just as you were saying.
After
Jade had been saying all the right things about signing for WWE.
Aye, sure. I think so the effects are Storm Agnes starting to get take scripts here.
Kicking in.
just overall, yeah, great signing for WWE and a bit of a kick in the balls for AEW because I think they had to keep Jade in order to get this limping women's division up and running again. And without her now, it's going to really struggle. And the only void, the only way of filling that void, I think, is going to need to be signing Mercedes Moné.
Well, there's rumours that Mercedes Moné might be featuring on Dynamite tonight, or certainly by WrestleDream at the weekend. But in terms of the Jade Cargill side of things, she's gone in there. She's almost immediately become the corporate star for them. You know, she's come out saying, as you mentioned there, you know, about how WWE has always been the goal. She was thanking everybody from Vince and Triple H to Bruce Pritchard to Nick Khan to some other fella who I didn't quite catch the name of as well. So she's doing all the right stuff. And as we've alluded to and said on other podcasts as well, she's pretty much the complete package. Yes, she is still a bit green in the ring, in my opinion. But they've got the performance centre there, which she's been bigging up no end about you know, what the possibilities that they can do with her there in terms of getting her trained up for that WWE house style. It's a pretty exciting time. What about yourself, Lewis? What do you think of the Jade Cargill signing?
Yeah, I think last week I seen their sort of presenter in a way that she's like trying to create a bigger star as possible, like all the interviews and all the media posts and ESPN and all that sort of stuff. And it's similar to, I suppose, similar and different in one way, whereas all the media appearances, kind of like Cody coming from AEW and all the sort of mainstream stuff as well coming from it, which we always thought would happen if Jade Cargill came to the WWE. There'd be a lot of mainstream attention as well, so it's good that she's bringing that. And I seen that she went straight to the performance center, and I still feel like it's going to be what I sort of believed in the last episode, that she's going to be on the main roster, but during our sort of days, she's going to be training at the performance center. I think, like I said, too big to go to NXT, and I think WWE can only do good things well. But I'll bring it back on to you. If you were a promoter, who would you sign right now? Would you sign Mercedes Moné or Jade Cargill?
I think for bums and seats and for the knowledge that you're going to get great matches, Mercedes Moné would be mine. And I would also be doing everything I could to push the crossover stuff, whether being in Star Wars, the Mandalorian, all that kind of stuff, which WWE didn't do. They didn't push that at all.
In WWE, do you reckon if they had the chance to sign Mercedes Moné instead of Jade Cargill, both of them are on the table right now with the history that Sasha Banks has and all the sort of bad terms she left on. If you were WWE, who do you think you would sign? What, a new Jade Cargill? You think you signed Jade Cargill? To be fair, I'd probably agree with that. There's been a lot of... Sasha Banks said, seven years with WWE. She's done, to be fair, all she can do. So I think this is pretty good for WWE. The AEW getting sort of the same treatment with Mercedes Moné if she comes in being new. So I think that sort of Jade Cargill going to WWE and Mercedes Moné going to AEW or whatever, I think that works best for both shows.
It's a good split. And what I was going to ask both of you on it as well is obviously the fanfare and the pomp and circumstance surrounding Jade being signed in regards to the ESPN stuff and all that. And again, it's going to lead into probably what Lewis is going to talk about for his pick for the front page. Was it a bit in bad taste that they make all this fuss about signing one person when they've just let 13 people go for absolutely no reason?
I think some of that's been overblown. It's a bit I if you're somebody like Dolph Ziggler or Matt Riddle right now, you are a wee bit pissed off that, you know, you've been sort of quietly let go, but you've been discreetly let go, and then mere days later, you've seen all this hoo-ha of a person from another company get signed. But that's been happening since time immemorial. You can go back as far as the 90s, the Monday Night War era, when somebody was quietly let go and either WWE signed somebody from WCW or vice versa, and that was hitting the dirt sheets. That was on the front cover of World of Wrestling, a Power Slam or something. So I think that's a bit overblown.
I think it's
I think it's the ones that have been released. I think some of them had to be released. I think it was time for Dolph Ziggler to do something else. I think Matt Riddle his past year, post Randy Orton tag team, it's been very lackluster. Nothing's been working for him since. There's been rumours of backstage, you know, his attitude isn't great. You know, guys like Seth Rollins have spoke publicly about his attitude. I don't think he was very much welcome anymore in the locker room. I think he had to be let go as well. Sorry, I'm cutting into your stuff here, Lewis, but I don't think. I just don't think it's as big a thing as most people make it up to be. It's another one of these things wrestling fans are making too much of.
I think we're sort of what we're saying is getting rid of people and bringing in new people can be a bit bad taste as well. But I've got the Arsenal game on in the background here, and it's just made me want to talk about it in football terms for 1 second. Like, you've got like Declan Rice coming into Arsenal for all this mad money, all the hype. You've got to get rid of the deadwood. You know what I mean?
Aye.
You've got to get rid of these people to sort of balance the books. Bringing in Jade Cargill, probably on a decent bit of money. If you're not going to be using these people, then they're better off being elsewhere where you can free up a bit of money and bring in somebody who's going to sort of promote your product a bit more and sort of increase it in the long run. So I think it's a bit shit for people like Dolph Ziggler and that, who've still got plenty of ability. Boys like Shelton Benjamin and that, but it is what it is, really. The same happens in just daily work. If you've fucking run your course, somebody else comes in and takes your job, pretty much, is it?
It would be much more shit if they released 20 and replaced them with 20
similar people.
Aye, no names. Aye.
So, like, just on that. So, obviously, like Steve, your story was Jade. Lewis, you're going with the spate of WWE releases for the front page this week. You mentioned there about, you know, when guys had run their course and it was time to cut the dead wood. In the terms of like Dolph Ziggler, Shelton Benjamin, you would have said that they were kind of like lifers with WWE maybe like 2 weeks ago. Do you think that, you know, the fact that they're not even being kept around as like producers or agents or anything like that, do you think that that's a bit of an issue, or do you think that that's maybe been something that they've maybe negotiated as part of their release? You know,
you'd imagine so, but I think there's a slight difference with Shelton Benjamin and Dolph Ziggler. I think Dolph Ziggler's got a bit more marketability about him. I don't know if he's maybe a bit younger than Shelton Benjamin in terms of maybe a couple of years or so, but I feel Shelton Benjamin would have been the ones maybe on a lesser contract that you would definitely keep as a producer with all his knowledge and everything. However, I think Dolph Ziggler's probably maybe the contract he was on, and sort of the tank he's got left in him, was probably him as well pushing for just get rid of me in here. You know what I mean? I'll go to AEW, I'll go with my brother, things like that as well. I think it's a bit more shite on people like sort of Mansoor and Massey or whatever they're called nowadays. People who are sort of up and coming as well, that with a better gimmick, not even a better gimmick, but a bit more time, a bit more usage, these people could definitely be Emma and people like that.
I felt so sorry for Emma with it.
Madcap,
you know, on the day that they announced that WWE announced that they were going to be doing their first ever not the first ever, but you know the most decent Australian pay per view in quite well. Elimination Chamber they were taking over to Perth, and Emma was tweeting about how she was so excited about it, and then less than an hour later she was like, "Oh, never mind, I've just been sacked." It's absolutely brutal. Oh,
as well as that, Riddick Moss as well, our man, sacked on the same day. So not only is she not getting to perform on the her WrestleMania, whatever she's been dreaming for life, they're both out of work. Not that they're going to be short of money.
They just get engaged as well.
There was also, I don't know if it was true or not, but apparently Riddick Moss didn't answer his phone when they phoned him because he knew that Emma had been phoned. He didn't answer his phone, and they announced he'd been released without actually talking to him.
Be shite getting them both on the one WhatsApp.
See,
or the
that's
one,
bullshit.
I don't know how true that is, but Riddick Moss tweeted out that he never even answered the phone in relation to the tweet that went out about it. So you can take it with a pinch of salt. He might just be on the bam up. But even one of the interesting things that I think came out of it, and again, you guys might think this is a bit odd as well. The Mace and Mansoor and Vic Boogs have all said that, or alluded to the fact that it was because of Triple H that they have been jettisoned, as opposed to what everyone assumed would have been Vince. Vic Boogs has said that Vince was a massive, massive fan of his, and when Triple H took over, that's when he stopped getting as much TV time. And Mason Mansoor, and I think on their Twitch or whatever that is that they use for their streaming stuff, they were talking about how Vince would regularly, you know, spitball ideas with them. It would help them write their segments, and they seemed to be a big fan of them. So, but to me, that's a bit of a, no, I suppose the freshen's not the word, but it's quite cool seeing that Vince isn't the only prick, to put it in another way, in that kind of term.
I think that with that as well, it's just, you could say in terms of like people giving Triple H a bad name for himself there, but see if it was Vince McMahon's calls on sort of changing the product, and maybe if Vince McMahon came back in, what people would be getting released. I think you could have seen names like fucking good wrestlers, like you're saying, proper good workers, like obviously not Seth Rollins, but people like him, instead of being Massey and
Jack Gable.
That's why it could be Gable, like Gable and Gargano, Ciampa. It could be people like that if it was.
Well, I think that was
about Vince. Yeah,
there's a lot of fear that I think that Gargano and Candice LeRae were going to get let go. And in some ways, you're kind of hoping that they were, because they're far, far too underutilized in their role just now. And AEW would be an ideal fit for them, in my opinion.
That's maybe part of the reason why.
Mm.
Because, like,
just spinning like their wheels.
They might have thought, well, we better not cut these guys, because those are the kind of guys Tony Khan likes. And before we know it, we've got those guys now with a grudge against us on either Wednesday or Saturday night trying to score ratings against us. I think, to go back into the Vince versus Triple H point, I think we're starting to see in the past year who Triple H likes, who he doesn't like. I think the reason why Drew McIntyre is falling further down the card is because Drew's more a Vince guy than he is a Triple H guy. Another example is Baron Corbin. He's been booted back into NXT, and the rumour is it's because Triple H just hasn't got a clue what to do with him, and he's a kind of done deal now. We're just not getting him over anymore.
I thought he would have went. When I saw that Rick Moss went, I thought that Corbin's going to go. But again, he's the only good enhancement talent. He's the only good at putting guys over. I mean, fair enough. Yep. It wouldn't have been my pick for Kurt Angle's final match, but in terms of if you want to like put somebody into that Dolph Ziggler role where, you know, you're putting young guys or guys that are getting called up into their first match on television, Corbin's always going to be a solid hand for that.
Yep.
But No, I'm just going
to
say, you know, obviously we don't like to see anybody, you know, getting sacked or anything like that. But is there anyone that you were surprised with that is still still in a job on the main roster that you thought, you know, when you saw the likes of, well, who was the first one to go? First one to go was Ali, Mustafa Ali, and then it was Ziggler, then when that was anyone else that you were expecting? Oh, Ali as well.
Aaliyah, one of them as well, aye. Like, aye. See, that was when I'm a bit gutted about, because she was there some like 6 years, didn't do anything with her. Like, that's when I feel most sorry for. Like, they had her for all that time and gave her nothing. You know,
I think it's even longer than that. I remember watching an NXT documentary back in the Black and Gold days, and it was the focal point of it was Tyler Breeze, and it was basically like the main arc of the documentary was Tyler Breeze had been told that if the gimmick that he came up with didn't stick on this occasion, he was going to get binned, and that's when he came up with the you know, the fashion icon with the selfie stick and all that. And Aaliyah was in that documentary. She was in the cusp of getting sacked because her real name's something like Noof. It's like really, really odd name.
She's Indian, I think she's Indian or Bangladeshi or something.
but she's been there a good long while. And then obviously when she got her main roster call up and spewed in the ring, probably didn't help much either.
I'm trying to think, like, I'm surprised didn't they get released. It might have been like a year ago, and I wouldn't have known about it. Bobby Roode, where on earth is he?
He's doing production stuff.
Aye, so there's him, and who else have I not seen for donkeys that I'm not even sure they're still with? Come to me.
There's plenty of experience there that, you know, even if they're not on telly, they're probably doing some stuff backstage. And
Indy Hartwell. Is she there?
Aye. She was on main event this week, I think, for what I remember.
She got beat by Nikki Cross, was it?
Nikki Cross was one that I thought was going to get binned as well. We had it in our Daft Sheet chat. Who we thought was going to go. And again, it's a bit morbid, but I mean, what would you expect from us? You know, if you've listened for the last 14 weeks, you know, the morbidness is kind of what we thrive on there. But certainly, you know, those releases have kind of dominated, or certainly dominated the later part of last week. And I think that on the whole, I'm going to go with the positives, I think I'm going to give Steve and Jade Cargill the front page this week. And the headline that I'm going to go with on that is Jade's made up by signing for the dub. So that's what we're going to go with for that. Now, as always, we're going to turn from the front page to the back page with the best of wrestling match, the best in-ring action of the week. Lewis, we'll come to you first on that. What would be your pick of the pinfalls this week?
I'm trying to think. I can't remember what I was going to go with. Hold on one second. Right, the Dominic Mysterio Dragon Lee match for the North American Championship on Raw. Obviously there's been better matches, especially in Collision, but I sort of want to just give Dominic Mysterio's flowers this week. I think that he's just been cast as this sort of hopeless sort of cuck guy in the Judgment Day, where he just follows Mommy around, gets these sneaky wee wins or gets battered weekly. But he actually showed that he can fucking wrestle as well and get a clean pinfall victory as well. Dragon Lee coming up as well. Obviously, if you've watched NXT or you've watched AEW or anywhere where Dragon Lee's been, you know what he can do. Probably one of the best in the world, one of the best luchadors in the world, and I think he will be the next Rey Mysterio. They've tried with obviously Sin Cara, they've tried with the other Sin Cara, they've tried with however many fucking Sin Caras there's been, but Alberto Del Rio getting that Latin market, but I think it's fitting that Dragon Lee's first match on the main roster is against the guy who he's trying to replace his dad. But
I know,
it Dominic, I think I was that one of Dominic's first clean victories in WWE? Must be. But yeah, it was a sort of fast-paced match. Lots of lucha things, put it as Kalista would say. And
good lucha stuff.
Good lucha things. But in the end, it was a clean pinfall victory. Oh shit, I've got someone in my face there. And he sort of got Dragon Lee's leg when he went for the final. Well, Dragon Lee went for his finisher, lifted him up, pulled his leg on the ropes, crotched him, and then hit him with one of his best frog splashes. And even as soon as that bell hit for the win, you could just see he was a lot more of a star. Dominic, for actually winning that first match without any help. And I'd say nowadays he's more than worthy of a championship, the North American Championship, whereas it seemed like a little bit of a joke at the start, but he's grown into his role as a performer and a wrestler as well, so kudos to him.
I think the whole last 12 months for the Judgment Day as a whole and as the individuals within it has been massive, and as you were saying there, you know, Dom, he's for the most part, he's been this kind of cuckolded simp for the other play throughout. But he's starting to get the quality up in his matches as well. You know, his first maybe year and a half in the main roster, didn't look at it at all. His dad was carrying him all the way. Everyone was kind of praying that there was going to be some sort of turn on there. And then obviously with the Judgment Day stuff and the turn at Clash of the Castle last year. Yeah. And since then, just everywhere he goes, he's getting booed. Even at the Belfast show a couple of months ago, like he was getting the biggest boos out of anybody on the night, and he's starting to back it up in the ring, and you kind of think, oh, he's still young, you know, he's got a lot to learn, but he's like 25 or 26. He's not the mysterious wee boy, you know. He's you know, in his mid 20s. There's guys his age that are a lot better, a lot quicker, a lot stronger, a lot faster.
Tyler Bate, Pete Bunn, Pete Dunne, things like that.
Pete Bunn,
the man. I've had two kinds of dart for it, excuse me, peace.
But, you know, he probably should be a lot better than what he is, or certainly than what he has been over the last wee while. But it's good to see, as you say, that he's getting these flowers, he's putting on decent matches. And when you're up against somebody like Dragon Lee, you know, a high flyer, basically, all you need to be able to do to make them look good is base and feed and sell. And that's exactly what he did in that match the other night there. He got the win, which continues the Judgment Day holding quite a lot of gold as well. So yeah, it's a strong effort. Did you get to see any of that match at all, Steve?
Unfortunately not. I can't remember the last time I've saw NXT, if I'm honest. But I know enough about Dragon Lee. He had that brilliant Best of Super Junior final match against Ospreay 4 years ago now. He also had that brilliant triple threat match in the Garden at that Ring of Honor New Japan show where he won the junior heavyweight title. So he's a guy that I've always had my eye on. And Dom, like you're saying, hats off to him. He goes out every time with the Judgment Day. He just embraces all that heel heat he gets, and he works with it brilliantly. It's the look that gets me. It's the fact that he's had the balls to go out with the Eddie Guerrero like mullet from his WCW days. I just love the fact that he embraces all that. I'm your pappy, part from back in the day, because he could have tried to shrugged that off, but he's had the wisdom to say, no, I'm going to embrace all that. I'm going to, you know, lean into all that and get all the heat that comes with it.
Cool. It's certainly an exciting time for the Judgment Day, and the storylines that are intermingling there between like Dom and Rhea, and Rhea showing a bit of a shine to Jey Uso. You get the JD McDonagh and Damian Priest stuff going on as well. It's from what the faction started off as to what it is now, you wouldn't think it was exactly, you know, from the same origins. And a lot of that has to do with the compellingness of Dirty Dom over the last wee while. So so that's a good jumping off point for the back page. Steve, what are you going to combat that with? What festival of fisticuffs are you going to fling at us?
I don't know if it was the best match of last week, but it's just the one that I remember most simply because it's two of my favourite wrestlers. It's Eddie Kingston against Claudio Castagnoli. Title versus title match from Dynamite Grand Slam. Obviously, the storyline's been built up pretty much ever since Claudio came into AEW. Kingston and him basically don't like each other. Well, certainly, Kingston certainly doesn't like him. He's called Claudio a scumbag. You know, told all these stories from their days together on the indies that Claudio, you know, never gave him respect and, you know, was a bit of a locker room snake and all this stuff. And, you know, and Claudio's gone back and says, well, everything I've said about you is proved true because all you do is whine, complain, bitch, moan, et cetera, et cetera. And you're a huge unprofessional, you know, I think he once said, I thought you getting signed by AEW, finally by a big promotion, would finally knock all that out of you. But instead, it's done the opposite. It's made you even worse and it's grew your ego even more. So this was the big blow-off. Now, I think I would have liked to have been a more sort of, maybe an old bad match, maybe a bit of a gimmick match. A proper feud ender thing, but in the end I'm actually glad they just stuck to a normal singles match because I think they just wanted both just wanted to beat each other clean in the ring. I like how it started. I like how they both showed them walking out, doing the Goldberg walking away at the start. I think that added to the tension of it a wee bit. And you know, Eddie, you know, kicking out of the Rikoa bomb twice, I think it was.
The second time was the bit that really pulled me in.
Aye, because I thought, if you know, he kicked out one time, he's not going to kick it a second time. I was like, oh shit, he did it. And, you know, and he got, of course, the big win in the hometown in New York. So I don't think it was ever any in doubt that Eddie was going to win because it was New York, because Claudio has held the title a year now. I think a change was needed in the Ring of Honor front, and Eddie winning the feud overall makes sense as well. And you know, him being a double champ now, he achieves his two dreams. He's achieved a dream of becoming a champ in New Japan, so holding a New Japan one, take the belt, and now the Ring of Honor title, because Ring of Honor was the promotion that kind of shunned him a wee bit. He was the outcast in a way. Or the black sheep of that promotion, so he's now kind of redeemed himself now by finally winning that world title.
And the thing is with that as well, you know, you talk about how, you know, it was the outcast of Ring of Honor. If Ring of Honor is going to be positioned how Tony Khan has been kind of building it over the last wee while by having bigger names holding the belts, more established names, then Eddie Kingston's the perfect guy to build a promotion around. Aye. I mean, he said in the aftermath of last week's match, he's not taking any more indie dates. He's a bit banged up and he wants to be saving himself for the ROH title defences, the New Japan title defences as well. So if they are going to be doing something, see, again, this is purely speculation. I think Rampage might become ROH. I think it would be worthwhile if ROH is going to have its own identity, where you've got the likes of MJF and Adam Cole as your tag champs, Eddie Kingston as your main champ, that kind of thing. I think replacing Rampage with a Ring of Honor show is the perfect way to do it. And then you've got Dynamite for everybody. You've got your Friday night show, which is Eddie's show, and you've got Collision, which is Danielson's show. I think that'd be the smart way of doing it. And again, I don't know if Rampage slot would maybe get more viewers than what Rampage is getting just now, but having ROH as its own television identity as opposed to, you know, an online identity, I think would be a smart move to go, and it would differentiate each of the shows as well.
On the topic of Collision as well, I just wanted to, I don't know if you've caught it, but it was some show as well again this week. I feel like that's the best product out in wrestling right
now. Didn't actually see it. I've
still not got around to it yet, but the Texas Death Match apparently was...
That was brutal.
That was brilliant.
There was a visual at the end of Brian. It put the camera behind Starks, and you just seen Brian wrapping his knee in the chain. You just seen what was happening. It just turned to Starks' face, and he was just like, fuck. Blood dripping from his mouth and everything. And you just seen what could happen, but he couldn't do anything about it. And Brian just came in the knee. It was absolutely brutal. It's one of the most brutal visuals I've seen. And then Christian Cage doing what he does, retaining the TNT title, because he was the champion before the match, obviously. And then just after the match, Luchasaurus just standing behind him. He's still got the title on his shoulder and everything. That was brilliant. So, yeah, unreal.
Yep, I think, like, post-punk, I mean, as in post-CM Punk, not the 1970s, 1980s music movement. AEW it's had a bit of a reset, and even Tony Khan this week has said that, you know, after Wrestle Dream, the landscape of AEW is set to change. So I'm excited to see where that's going in terms of that. And, you know, we've spoke about Eddie Kingston and the positives of him taking that title. But now that Claudio's lost that title, he's back into sort of, you know, general BCC mode. What do you think the next thing for the BCC is going to be? Because obviously they've had the Elite feud, they've had the Best Friends feud. Are they going to start going for the trios, you know, where they're acclaimed? Are they going to get them against House of Black at any point? You know, where do you see that kind of branching off, especially with Mox being the... he's been the international champion after... in fact, was that last week or was it the week before?
It was last week.
Get fucked off,
wasn't it? Aye. Jeez. Aye, it was unscripted. So the first unscripted title change in AEW history, which is hilarious. I want Moxley to take time off, because Christ, he needs it. I think Danielson... We can expect him to be the captain of Collision. I wouldn't hate seeing the group break off. Like, they're guys that don't really need to be in a faction. They've all got the talent to break out on their own. I think Wheeler the U2 is the only one that might struggle, but I think he needs something different now, because if they want to... And if they're serious about building up this young talent, he's the one they need to look at. He is... You know, he's had now, 2 years of being moulded by Moxley, Danielson and Claudio. You know, they could do an angle similar to what they've been doing with Daniel Garcia and Sammy Guevara on the JAS side. He says, right, you've had your 2 years under the learning tree. Time to go out and see what you can do. Maybe he could chase Eddie for the Ring of Honor belt. Well, you've spent a lot of that time as the pure champion in Ring of Honor, so maybe he could be like the first series challenger on that front. He's got that Ring of Honor style, that indie style that they love there. Claudio, I'd like to maybe see him do something with somebody like... I just want to see him have banging matches, to be honest, with Omega, with Samoa Joe, whoever. You know, I don't care if he's heel or baby face, he works either way. You know, he's just a reliable hand in the ring. And, you know, Danielson, we've already touched on, you know, he's going to be fine no matter what. And Moxley just needs to take 2 or 3 months off. Just, fuck's sake, John, just take the rest of the year off. The spot won't be taken. You know, Tony Khan said publicly, you're one of the greatest wrestlers ever. You're the guy that, you know, carried this company during a pandemic. You ain't going to forget about you. You'll be fine on the way back.
Well, no, I think I'm going to have to eat my words in terms of the Collision thing as well. When I said a couple of weeks ago about Punk going away, Brian maybe not being as big a sort of mainstream attraction, but I think just having that show for now as matches being the main thing, I think I'm just completely being a hypocrite here, but it's one of the shows I look forward to most in a week, just because... Aye. Starks and Danielson and that, just having matches. If you just put them two in the main event and just a different stipulation for the next 52 weeks, I would watch it every week. It's just brilliant. So completely revoke any comments for the other week when I said it wasn't going to be as big a his bigger sort of draw.
Walking it back.
The ratings are going to be down, but they'll come back.
I think it's
going the way I wanted to go. It's that classic wrestling show where Dynamite tends to be the more sports entertainment focused one.
Mm.
Now that is the more WWE style one, where it's Collision, kind of more of a WCW style. Mm. Reminds me of the old kind of
Cruiserweight
start and all that. Like the old WCW Thunder days.
Mm.
Before Russo got a hold of it and fucking torched it in fire.
Well, I think on the basis of the arguments both of these have put forward, as much as I enjoyed Claudio and Eddie, my preferred match from last week's Dynamite was MJF against Samoa Joe. I thought that was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. But I think in terms of the dynamic and in terms of the swell of positivity around it, I'm going to give this one to Lewis and Dragon Lee against Dirty Dom. And the headline on the back page this week is going to be Dragon's Fire put out by Dirty Dom. So we'll move on from that. Now, usually this is where we would have the centrefold. We might still get it if I get the audio sent across to me from the interview that I carried out with Flash Morgan Webster and Danny Luna of Subculture the other night there. I'll drop that in here now. But an off chance that doesn't come through in the next 12 hours, then you'll just need to wait till next week for that. But it was a good chat we had. Thanks very much to the Impact team for setting that up. But if you don't hear it this week, then you definitely will hear it next week. So we'll push on and we will go to the page three, the most titillating bits of gossip in the wrestling world this week. Steve, I'll come to you first. What has got your I was going to say your nipples hard, but that's not the thing.
Danny Medjugorje's nipples hard.
Imagine that in the fucking Nacho Libre suit, man.
Oh my god. Oh man, I would purge anybody that they shared the photos of that on Facebook. like you said, but because of my stag do come down, I'll be brutally honest to say I've not been following much wrestling news beyond what we talked about at the start. Just one thing I caught this morning was this little vignette that was shown in NXT. It was about it was just somebody like showing like this old footage of WCW Saturday night and alluded to the Cincinnati Bengals. It's not hard for anyone to decipher. It's obviously a kind of small hype video for Brian Pillman Jr. We know the AEW let him go. I don't know, it wasn't formally announced, but it was strongly speculated that he signed with WWE and was immediately going to be thrust into the Performance Center. So it looks like we're going to get him debuting on NXT soon enough. And I've not really read up much what the plans are for him. I think it's just going to be another, you know, second generation thing. They're obviously immediately going to lean into him being Brian Pillman's kid. I doubt they'll do the varsity gimmick. I think they might do something that was similar to his dad, the Flying Brian gimmick thing.
Well,
that'd be pretty funny if they went with the Loose Cannon. But
I could battle on NXT next week.
That would be funny. Or like doing a piss in the ring or something like that, and like he did in ECW. I think they'll do the whole just second generation thing. And what I'd like to see them do is maybe do something with Bron Breakker. You know, like the two sons of two WCW legends, maybe either as a tag team or as foes against each other. And I think that could be Bron Breakker's swung feud in NXT before he finally gets his main roster push.
There's been a lot of talk with the Jade Cargill signing that AEW fumbled or dropped the ball with Jade Cargill to let him go there. There's not been so much talk about that with Brian Pillman Jr. And I mean, he's going into NXT, but he's he's TV ready. You know, the amount that he was on Dynamite during what mainly sort of what 2021. He was on for like a good bit. You know, he had his feud with MJF. He had some really good. I was going to say the really good matches. He had a good amount of TV time, I would probably say. And he's probably somebody that's going into the Performance Center with a lot more television experience than most of the recruits that they have in there. But do you think it is a case of AEW dropping the ball with him and not knowing what to do with him other than using his surname? And do you think that WWE can make him better, I suppose?
I think that with AEW as well, they've dropped the ball massively on him. He'd be perfect for Christian Cage's next feud for that TNT title.
They
mentioned it. It was MJF. Aye. He mentioned something like, dad's dead and your crack whore mum or something.
I think I definitely remember Christian doing a small angle with him. I think maybe it was just like a luchasaurus job.
Did he mention that with him as well?
Because it's in that little video clips. I found on YouTube.
But it must have just been a quick sort of one and done. But yeah, I think that he's where was he before AEW?
I think he was really anywhere. As far as I knew, he had small indie run.
But I think that he might have been Japan or something, but I probably should know this on a wrestling podcast, but anyway.
Petty and ill-informed, that's us.
But I think he's got a lot of... He's got the look, he's got the sort of in-ring ability. A good start in NXT and then WWE years to come.
WWE love their second generation guys. Like, that instantly has a pull for them, so he can join that club with Cody, Randy, Roman, you know. So like, I've always thought WWE, I've always been missing a trick with that. They need to like form a big faction of all the second generation guys against all the guys that had no prior family history in the wrestling business, do the whole Nepo babies versus the grinders, the guys that had to do it the hard way kind of feud.
So you've got Brian Pillman, Bron Breakker, The Rock's daughter,
the whole bloodline.
The bloodline,
Dom, Cody, Carmella, because her dad was an old jobber, Natalia. Aye. Charlotte. So the list is endless, pretty much. You can have like Seth and
Jason Jordan
and all that.
did Griff Garrison jump ship with Pillman as well? Because I don't watch the hardcore Elevation or anything like that, but he has not been seen. To my knowledge, he's not been seen for a good while.
I don't think so. I might have done an event signing, but I think Pillman was the sort of the start of that anyway. The Varsity Blondes. But
Juliet Hart was with him as well. She got corrupted by the House of Black. She's having a really good tear on Collision now as well, Juliet Hart. She's kind of making waves.
I think she's she'll take the TBS belt from
Starlander.
I think that Mercedes Moné might come in and try and do something with Juliet Hart as well. I think they were panning over to her during Julie Hart's match at, was that All In?
All In,
She was in the match, anytime she was on the screen, it panned to Mercedes Moné. So I think that'd probably be a pretty good story if she took off Statlander and then the next opponent was Mercedes Moné, sort of to make her not seem like she was going straight for the main event scene in the main title, like a Charlotte Flair. So I don't know, that might work.
Well, Pillman Jr. in NXT definitely has its plus sides. I think, you know, if, as I say, he's got all the TV experience, but maybe he just needs that WWE kind of spit shine to take him to that next level. So we'll see how that goes. What's been your most gossip worthy bit of stuff from the past week?
I'll probably have to go for I'll go with the potential, I say potential, but it's pretty much
there for us, the War Games that's coming up.
War Games.
If it doesn't happen, then it'll probably just be a 4-on-4 or a 5-on-5 elimination. But yeah, it's sort of lining up for War Games at Survivor Series between the Bloodline. So obviously the three of them, and then JD and obviously Jey Uso, Cody, Sami, and KO. I think that'll be more of a match, hopefully this year, than the sort of story. But it's got good elements in it. It's got loads of, if that is the case, you've got the Judgment Day not trusting each other with JD. You've got KO not trusting Jey. You've got loads of potential twists and turns with that. So I suppose it is gossip because nothing's been confirmed yet. But looking forward to that if it happens. We've got 8 wrestlers in there that know what they're doing, can tell stories, and sort of a lot of character progression can be done with that as well. So, aye. Looking forward to that.
It's like I managed to watch Raw, or the majority of Raw, for the first time in a long time this week, and what I found compelling about those characters interacting with each other as they intertwined throughout the show. So it wasn't everyone in the one, it wasn't like a promo train between all of them. There was, you know, individual bits. You had you had Cody coming out at the start of the show, and then the Judgment Day coming out, you had Jey coming to his aid, then Damian Priest not wanting to get involved in it, JD McDonagh coming out of the chairs, all that sort of stuff. And then later in the show, you had Drew, who's been intertwined in all of this because he didn't help Jey when he was getting battered last week, and the New Day getting involved in that as well. So it's an interesting dynamic that you've got all these guys across the show potentially involved in this one storyline. And they've all got reason for it as well. You know, the front and centre stuff with the Bloodline and Judgment Day is fair enough, but then you work in New Day constantly getting scuppered by the Usos, you get Drew getting screwed out of championship by Solo at Clash of the Castle, that kind of thing. I found that to be quite interesting. And I wonder if it does go to War Games, if Drew somehow gets himself involved in it as well.
I think it'd be good to have it'd probably be easier to find another teammate for the sort of non-Judgment Day side, but say if he was to join forces with KO, Sami Zayn, all that, and Judgment Day were able to find one more person, whether even they allowed Rhea to be in the match or anything like that. But I think completing Drew's heel turn with the ending of that match being, or sort of a Tegan Noxy vibe, where Dakota Kai just turned and battered them all and just went, Ken, what? If yous aren't going to get the picture of Jey being bad news here, I'm just going to kick fuck it all, yes, and just no care anymore. So I think that a turn at the end of the War Games with Drew turning heel there and allowing the Judgment Day to win, not joining the Judgment Day, but just sort of declaring themselves as the heel, would be a good sort of entry for Drew to be in there. Otherwise, I don't really see how he fits in at all, to be honest.
Right. I caught the Drew segment from Raw and
Shut up, Miz.
And I butted him. Butted him a million. And I think finally it's looking like the heel turn's coming. And I wonder if, what if maybe if Priest were to leave Judgment Day, maybe let's say there's a scenario where he has a failed cash in or something like that. Maybe he tries to cash in during the Seth Nakamura match, but Jey thwarts him, and as punishment, Priest gets chucked out of the Judgment Day and they replace him with Drew. Could that be a possibility?
Could be.
Anything's a possibility, is it? Where there's loads of twists and turns. I think that'd be a decent show for that.
It'd be good to have him in a faction that meant that his team legacy wasn't 3MB. it'd be good to have him in that.
The Bronze Dog of Wars.
What was that one?
When they just had daft matches with the Shield all the time.
That completely went over my head. That
was a low point of Raw.
Cool. Well, for the gossip, I think I'm a sucker for War Games chat, I must admit. So, Lewis, I'm going to give this one to you, and my headline is going to be, and again, usually these ones look better when they're written down, but this one's going to be better when it's said. It's going to be War Games. Huh. What is it good for? Absolutely cracking cage matches. So that's what that one's going to be. So that takes us neatly on to our TV page picks. So stuff that our listeners should be seeking out on their television boxes, their smart tellies, whatever that is, that's wrestling related, but not necessarily wrestling. Lewis, what would you say is something to catch the eye this week?
So it's been out for something like 8 years, but it's always a classic to look back on. It's called Wrestling Isn't Wrestling, and it's basically pretty much a short film just on YouTube, and it tells sort of the story of Triple H, but it sort of breaks off into Undertaker and John Cena and things like that, and it's cast with, obviously, probably here's another cancellation of the podcast, but a man that tends to grab dicks when he's in matches.
Name redacted.
Exactly. He's in it. I'm sure there's something about Kazarian and Daniels. I don't know if anyone's watched Drake and Josh before in their past or anything like that. Josh Peck, he's
I am not revealing my age on this podcast.
Come on, you're still watching now. But there's a moment in it where they're just shouting, "Fuck you, Triple H." And it's just weird to see Kazarian and Daniels just sit back like, "Oh, can't believe you said that." But yeah,
was this when Josh was like 20 stone Josh, or when he slimmed down? Junkie Josh.
Junkie Josh. It's sort of like a parody on his career, and it just talks you through it in a more of a lighthearted way. It talks about Shawn Michaels, talks about The Undertaker, and then at the end it sort of tells it sort of a heartfelt message about like what wrestling's all about, you know. You don't have to be a massive wrestling fan to get wrestling, understand what it's about. It is a show, but it's got larger-than-life characters, it's got stories that keep you gripped, it's got emotional moments, sad moments, all this sort of stuff.
So it's just like Breaking Josh then?
Exactly, yeah. So either my two picks for this one are go watch a scrap between Drake and Josh, or go watch Wrestling Isn't Wrestling. Either of the two of them, terrific viewing, and yeah, definitely something to sit down and look at. It's only 24 minutes long, so yeah, I'd say look at that. It's been praised by Triple H and Stephanie McMahon as well, and Meltzer if that fucking means anything nowadays. But
is that maybe what's is that responsible for the alleged split?
I think so. Yeah, it was 8 years ago, but it's caused a rift.
Caused a rift.
I think Triple H told me that a few days ago.
Said the wildest thing I've seen about the alleged Triple H and Stephanie McMahon split is that Triple H is already banging Jade Cargill. That's the.
I seen Stephanie on Tinder as well the other day, so it must be true.
Have you seen the meme that's getting shared around with Stephanie right now?
No.
It's a white woman after saying gracias in a Mexican restaurant.
Yes,
restaurant,
I did see that. Aye.
And it's like, it's so fitting, like so. Bang on, like the reaction that they would give.
I've seen there's been a Kevin James meme getting kicked about. Obviously, it's Ken Queens. I don't get it. I don't know what the context there is. Is it just a fat guy looking smug and sheepish?
It's one of these things that's caught on. Like somebody's like found a still of him in a movie, and it's like me asking my work pal to smoke their vape, and it's just like him, like a kind of cheeky face like this. But this is I don't really get it myself. It's one of these ones that just somebody finds a meme, it catches fire, and it just spreads. Well,
that, I initially thought that that's why, again, that was another reason for the Stephen Triple H breakup, that she'd left him for Paul Blart Mall Cop. I thought that was what, I thought that's what was going on.
Would that be an upgrade or a downgrade?
Don't know, he knows how to rock a segue. it's an awful film, Paul Blart Mall Cop. I remember there was two films came out. There was two films came out at the same time that both had the same premise, but one was considerably darker than the other one. So you had Paul Blart Mall Cop with Kevin James, and there was one called
is it the Seth Rogen one?
The Seth Rogen one where they date rapes Anna Faris.
Yes, that like, one was fucked up.
It's like the port, obeying the port or something like that.
That's it.
Same premise, but two completely different films. Anyway, that was
With this as well, I'm surprised that Triple H actually praised it, considering this is one of the sort of the main facets of it as well. The guy said,
observing the port. That was it. Observing the port.
Said that Triple H is an arrogant but deeply insecure man with an inferiority complex who never got over the pain of being overshadowed by better wrestlers. He says that he sought the power backstage because he can never achieve the glory that he truly desired in the ring, and only got to the top following his marriage to Stephanie McMahon. But
cutting.
It's said in a jokey way, so it's fine.
Context is everything. Context is everything. Steve, what would be your pick of the TV pages this week?
Well, while I was wallowing in my bed, trying to get over that mercilessly strong post-stag-do hangover, I was doing a wee bit of YouTube searching just to find some wrestling content to try and heal my ways. But I was trying to keep away from the parts for unknowns and the cultaholics because, you know, they're kind of, all their top 10 charts, they're just a waste of time now, and they're just rehashes of other ones from other sites now anyway.
But I'm actually... We need
to do some shooting sometimes, you know what I mean? Big up ourselves more. I mean, Tom Campbell, we love you, but, you know, sometimes cultaholic... You need a fucking kick in the balls some days. I stumbled across this. It's a relatively new one. It's by an American guy called Colin. His channel's just called Wrestling Colin. And he does some great content on some Japanese wrestling. And he's done a cracking documentary on Keiji Muto's career. Keiji Muto retired this year. He's one of, maybe even regarded by some as the best Japanese wrestler of the 1990s. He was, you know, he went by two personas. He was one of the guys that pioneered an alter ego. Sometimes he went by his own name, Keiji Muto, in the ring, and then the other times he went by the Great Muta. And he had a legendary career. You know, he was several times IWGP champion. He was, of course, part of the famous Three Musketeers group, along with Shinya Hashimoto and Masahiro Chono, that, you know, carried New Japan all through the 90s. He was also big in WCW. He was TV champion for a short time in WCW. He was also tag team champion with... and I didn't actually know this until I saw the documentary. He was tag team champion with Vampiro for a short time in WCW as well. He also had a famous string of matches with Sting as well. So he could almost say he was the guy that that kind of created that big Japanese VHS rental craze in the 90s. You know, I think that followed on from the All Japan Four Pillars era as well. He was also champion in Old Japan. That's the other thing. He was the first guy to hold, I think it was the IWGP and the All Japan Triple Crown within the same year. I think he was the first guy to ever do that. And then years later down the line, at 58, he won Noah's main title as well. So he's now the only guy to hold the three main titles in what's still regarded as Japan's top three promotions, New Japan, All Japan, and Noah. So he had a great, great career, and it was just a great breakdown of it.
The other really good video that the guy did was the origin of the Gonzo Bomb. Probably the most famous or probably the most dangerous move in all of wrestling.
Mm.
It was done by Toshiaki Kawada in several of his matches with Mitsuharu Misawa. I'd never seen one before. It's one of those moves that I thought I'd seen until I realised I've only actually seen it in a video game, but not actually done in an actual real life wrestling match. Jesus Christ. Sorry to get morbid here, but no wonder Misawa died when he did, because the way it happened was he basically put him in the power driver position, but then released it like a power bomb, and it spikes Misawa's whole body onto the driven into his neck and head, on top of that really hard Japanese canvas that they used. So scary. Again, to see.
Brody Lee's been hitting it in AEW.
Oh, he's hit it a couple of times. Looking it up there, it's a lot of that's in the timing and the weight distribution by the look of it. That is a.
Scary, but he did it three other times. He did another once to Misawa, and another one, believe it or not, was to Muta. And I think the other one, I think he said, was Yunakayama in a match in Noah. I think he was going to plan to give one to Kenta Kobashi, but Kobashi's neck by then was gone, and Kenta said, you know what, this time, no.
Kenta Kobashi kiboshed it.
Uh-huh. but if you're wanting to get a good bit of history on some Japanese wrestling stars, Wrestling Colin is your man. Really well presented channel. Guy's a really good talker as well, and studies his stuff well.
I think because of the passion you've spoken about that with, Steve, and your Japanese pronunciations of those names, you're the bravest man in this podcast, I think, this week. So I'm going to give the pick of the TV pages to you on this occasion. But certainly, you know, if you do have a spare 22 minutes to watch an episode of Derek and Josh, go and do it as well.
Being a Celtic supporter, because of the Japanese players we've signed in the past few years, I think I've been working on my Japanese name pronunciations.
I think my favourite one is it's Shunsuke Nakamura, you're fucking doughball. I love it.
The most Celtic da comment ever.
You're fucking doughball. Brilliant.
Okay,
See next time. See if WWE ever bring a pay per view to Scotland or bring Raw back. Somebody needs to have that sign in the crowd.
Also, just always see all the Rangers supporters booing him, and he's coming out and he's like, why are you all booing me? And they said, you used to be for Celtic, you fucking dick.
I was going to say something there, but it definitely gets cancelled, so I'll leave that one for the chat.
And you don't live in that part, the right part of the world for that kind of talk.
No, it wasn't even then in sectarian, it was for a change. Anyway, that has been this week's Daft Cheat. I'll just go back through the headlines. So our front page is going to be Jade's made up by signing for the dub. The back page is going to be Dragon Fire put out by Dirty Dom. Page 3 is going to be War Games. Huh, what is it good for? Absolutely cracking cage matches. And the TV pages are going to be the WrestleCon Japanese shenanigans there. So, guys, thank you very much for joining me again for this week's Daft Sheet. Breaking news, it'll be breaking news depending on when you listen to this. We're actually getting a main show this week. Vav, Grado, John, or some formation of the main fee have put out that they're doing a billion put over. So it looks like we're getting a main show, which means listenership for this one will dwindle like fuck. For those of you that have listened, thank you very much. If you are enjoying what you're getting from us and you're looking forward to what you're getting from the main show, don't forget to sign up for the Patreon, join the Discord, interact with us on social media, and however you enjoy your wrestling over the next week, make sure it's daft and make sure it is sheety. Cheerio!
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.